Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Sarah Faulkner from Leamington Spa, and you're listening to the absolute treat that is the Tennis Podcast.
Well, there's Sarah Faulkner, and apparently in my second take, I'm not sounding like Alan Partridge, so that's already a success, because apparently the first time I reacted to that opening, I did. Catherine Whittaker has informed me of that fact. She's in the bubble at the O2. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, David. I've saved you from yourself, or I thought I had until you mentioned the saving that I did.
Well, you know, me and Alan, kindred spirits. How you doing, Matt? You all right?
Fine, thank you, David.
Good. Illuminated by his new light. We've all got new lights except Catherine to make us look better on Zoom. And yeah, we're here to preview the ATP finals, talk about what's gone on at the pre-tournament press conferences. We've heard more from Alexander Zverev, so we'll be talking about that further to what we were discussing in Monday's show. But before we get into any of that, we've really got to find out what's it like in the bubble. Because the only person we know that knows is Catherine. And Catherine, you're in there. What's it been like?
I mean, it's a lot like just sort of the inside of a hotel room. Very, very uneventful. But I had my first COVID-19 test this morning. That was all very efficient. The actual test itself was unpleasant, as I'd been warned to expect, but not in any dramatic way. I tested negative, by the way, and felt a weird sense of sort of accomplishment. I sent around the screen grab of my notification that I tested negative, and I got such a wide variety of responses, from sort of congratulations to oh, and just sort of well done. And I don't know what I was expecting, but I enjoyed the congratulations very much. I did feel like I'd accomplished something. So that was this morning. I got the results at about 1 p.m. But I was sort of already hunkered down in my hotel room by then. I'd sort of expected to be quarantining all day, so I thought I'd just persevere with it, really. And here I am at 8 p.m. still in my pyjamas.
Mm. How many meals have you eaten?
I've had 2 room service meals, and a third one is on the way. So apologies in advance for the expected interruption. I'd say probably the most eerie and dystopian element of the last 24 hours was actually my drive across London to get into the bubble. Waze took me right through central London. And although the traffic sort of in the suburb, traffic sort of locally in Putney was really, really bad, once I got into central London, driving through Parliament Square in particular and Victoria Embankment was eerily quiet. And, you know, I was driving past sort of places where I'd had experiences sort of 9 months ago or a year ago. Drove past a hall in Westminster where my dad and I went to a feminist talk in February, and drove past a restaurant where I went to a friend's birthday in January. And it was, I don't know. I found that really, really spooky and sad. It was like sort of the ghosts of a former life, hopefully a former life that will again become my life. But there was something quite haunting about that. Beautiful as well. It was, yeah, it was quite beautiful, sort of driving past the Tower of London and everything. But then I got lost trying to find the Intercontinental Hotel in Greenwich, and ended up sort of at the Intercontinental Hotel, but frustratingly behind a sort of wire fence. I could see it. I could see the car park. I could see the barrier. Oh, that's my room service. Hang on.
Oh. She's ordered two beers, I know that, Matt. I mean, in fact, she was only supposed to be ordering two beers or one beer, and then suddenly a salad was added to the order. And
yes, Caesar salad with prawns, I think, if I remember correctly.
Oh, lovely. I mean, you know, she's having the time of her life on this isolation day.
Yes, she did describe it as mandatory napping earlier, which I thought was a wonderful description.
She was also complaining about various times of various press conferences because they were getting in the way of pre-scheduled naps. But, you know, we can say all this because she's not on the mic right now, you see. You know, by the time this is up, she won't know. We've done it, so we'll be all right. It is one of those funny places, though, the O2, isn't it, Matt? Because, I mean, the number of times we've been trying to find our way out late at night because they've closed off various exits, and then suddenly, as Catherine says, there's a wire fence up, and the bit that you're trying to get to, you can see it, you just can't get there.
I lose all sense of where I am in the O2 and how to get places because it's just the circle. Everything feels both very close and very far away. It's very confusing.
Well, I think I've not actually been on site. I've returned, by the way. I've been delivered the world's most enormous beer.
You ordered two beers. There's four beers in that bottle.
Worthington's White Shield from Burton upon Trent. Thank you very much.
Right.
I think that effect, Matt, although I haven't actually been on site yet, is exacerbated this year because my opening experience of arriving in the lobby once I finally did get on the other side of the fence, arrived in the lobby and there was a bereft-looking Deliveroo driver there who was having some trouble linking up with his customer. And eventually he said, no, I can't go. Anyway, eventually put his customer on speed dial and it sounded very much like Diego Schwartzman to me. And the the issue was that the Deliveroo driver was only allowed to go into the lobby, couldn't deliver up to the rooms, but the tennis players are in a portion of the hotel for people in bubble number one. I'm in bubble number two, so I'm allowed in the lobby, but people in bubble number one aren't allowed to go to the lobby. Their access to the O2 Arena is via some route that doesn't involve the lobby. So the delivery driver was saying, you've got to come down to meet me and get the food. And Diego Schwartzman, or a really good Diego Schwartzman impersonator, was saying, but I'm not allowed in the lobby. I can't do that. And I really missed the opportunity to do the decent thing and just offer to take the food off their hands. I was distracted with other things at the time.
So she's ordered her own 3-pint bottle of beer instead.
I don't know how to tackle it.
Mm. No, I'm sure you'll find a way. So that happened, and the reason Catherine is in the bubble is because she's presenting live television coverage in the UK here for Amazon Prime Video, which is the main rights holder for the ATP and WTA tours. So Catherine's coverage will start on Sunday. It'll be rehearsals tomorrow, Catherine. And we're all a bit relieved that you got to this point, because about 3 days ago, Matt and I received a message from you which said something bad has happened.
And I was right, wasn't I? Something bad had happened.
Yes.
What did you think when you read that message?
Well, I mean,
what were you expecting?
It could have been a number of things, to be quite honest, given the years of history that we've had together. I did assume it had been some sort of accident because, you know, that
it was
wasn't
an
too
accident,
far-fetched
David.
For me. Yeah.
It was an accident involving pistachio nuts.
Yeah.
And I think my pistachio nut eating days might be over, which is a very sad thing to have to say.
Yes.
But yes, to put you out of your misery, I know you're on the edge of your seats. I have a cap on my front tooth and have done since I was 7 years old, thanks to my childhood best friend, Ruth Noble, who I'm certain isn't listening. But if you are, hello, Ruth.
What did she do?
She smashed me in the face with her lunchbox at school when we were seven. Not on purpose, I should say.
Phew. Oh,
and
you had a different relationship with your best friend than I had with mine.
I mean, she said it wasn't on purpose.
What, were your experiences deliberate then, Matt?
No,
Matt only had nice friends.
Yeah, no teeth were broken in my friendships.
Nor right. should they be. No. Nor should they be, Matt. No. It was a regrettable incident that has haunted me to this day. And the caps usually last, anywhere between sort of 6 months and 10 years. And this one had lasted about 10 years. And I've been vaguely aware of it in the back of my mind for the last few years, knowing that it was probably on its last legs and hoping that it wouldn't come off at an inopportune time, such as 3 days before having to make live television. And of course, that is precisely what happened. So I descended into a massive spiral of panic.
Which is what you always do, isn't it? What everybody does in a situation like this.
Between myself and David, we called every dentist in Putney, or in the southwest London area, really. And of course, magical David Law got me in at the Putney Dental Emporium, an emporium no less,
yeah,
at 10 a.m. the next day. And they fixed it all for me. And it was so obvious that I was prepared to say yes to anything. I was that grateful to be sitting in the chair customer that they managed to upsell me an X-ray and a mouth guard, because apparently I'm a grinder. So... So that's 600 quid I'm never seeing again. But I no longer look like one of the meth addicts from Tiger King. So swings and roundabouts.
And we do have photographic evidence. So you'll be seeing that on our Instagram channel later. Anyway.
Yeah, David waited about 12 hours before saying, this is great content.
12 minutes, I think.
I did. I'd couched it though.
Yes,
I
said, you did. And you,
if this works out all right, can we use that picture?
It's not one of my best pictures, folks.
No, but anyway, all's well that ends well, and Catherine's ready for live television at the O2 Arena starting on Sunday. Phew.
Yes,
I'm slightly worried about the next part of your face, which is going to come under fire in 2020. We've had eyes, we've had mouth.
Yes. Gosh.
No,
sorry.
No, Matt, that's it now. All right? Stop it.
I've already broken my... I broke my nose when I was seven as well.
Is it the same incident?
In gym class at school, PE class.
Is it
class.
The same girl or...?
No, I did that to myself. I just hit it on a bench. So, anyway.
And I wasn't around to help that.
I was
then,
quite an accident-prone so. Child and yeah. adult.
Yep. Oh, moving on. So that's how Catherine has got to where she is, and hopefully a good week is in store. We are going to be recording podcasts after play every day is the intention, although we'll see how Catherine's feeling after having done 12 hours of live TV presentation. I'm sure she'll be delighted to speak to us for another half an hour after that. So that's the intention. Today, in the last 24 hours, isn't it, they've done the official draw, which we'll come on to in a little while. They've done the order of play. So we'll go through the draws, we'll go through the order of play and talk about all that. But today was media day at the O2. Now, ordinarily, this would be when all of us convene on site and we attend in person press conferences and all the players do one-to-one interviews. All of this has, like the rest of the year, certainly since March, happened virtually on Zoom. And so we've all been... calling in from our various makeshift studios, our offices, our bedrooms, all sorts of places around the world. And all the eight players have spoken. Now, given the most recent edition of the podcast featured and concentrated on the allegations of domestic abuse against Alexander Zverev by his ex-girlfriend Olya Sharipova, which I believe is what we should have been calling her. And we, you know, it's one of those that that I'm just about trying to get to grips with. Alexander Zverev came into his press conference today, and he was asked by Simon Briggs of The Telegraph if he was concerned that his reputation was tarnished or was going to be tarnished by the allegations that have been made against him by his former girlfriend. Now, at this point, Zverev, I think, had got his phone resting on his knee, and he sort of, he addressed Simon and looked down at the camera intermittently as well, and he said, "We're all here to play tennis. I'm looking forward to playing, but in the last few days, the focus has shifted to the off-court stuff. Many people ask me why I kept my mouth shut and didn't say anything. While I very much regret that these accusations are made, I have to stick to my initial thing of them being untrue and continue to deny them. These accusations are just unfound, untrue. How the relationship is described is not how it was. It is not who I am. It is not how I was raised by my parents. It is simply not who I am as a person. It makes me sad what impact such accusations can have on the sport and on myself as well. I truly apologise that the focus has shifted away from the sport. We all love tennis, and that's why we are here. I'm looking forward to playing in London for the first time. As I've said, I have to keep denying them as they are unfounded and untrue." That's what Zverev said. And as I said, he was clearly ready for a question because he had got his phone on his knee. We kept seeing him look down for quite long periods of the time that he answered that question. And we were discussing amongst ourselves, you know, is he just reading a statement there? And that's how it kind of felt and came across. Afterwards, we watched the footage back that was posted on the service that the ATP provide for us here, and there were actual side cameras shooting his phone, the picture of him looking down at his phone, and it was very clear that that is what he was doing, and he'd gone in with a prepared statement. Now, you may recall in Monday's show, one of the most powerful contributions I thought was Matt's description of how there is a lack of anybody who's condemning violence in general and domestic abuse in general, not related to this specific case or to the truth or lack of truth of these allegations, but just generally, either from Zverev and no reaction at all from the ATP to that point. Now, in the last couple of hours, we have received a statement from the ATP, which reads thus: ATP statement on domestic violence and abuse. The ATP fully condemns any form of violence or abuse. We expect all members of the tour to do the same and to refrain from any conduct that is violent, abusive, or puts others at risk. In circumstances where allegations of violence or abuse are made against any member of the tour, legal authorities investigate and due process is applied. We then review the outcome and decide the appropriate course of action. Otherwise, we are unable to comment further on specific allegations. So, Catherine, that's what Zverev has said today. That's what the ATP have said today. What's your reaction to what we've heard today?
Oh, well, tremendous relief that there is a statement from the ATP, even though it doesn't say an awful lot or move things on an awful lot in terms of their own investigation or anything. Just that recognition is so significant, and the condemnation of domestic violence, as Matt said so powerfully, their voice matters on these things. And as I was saying about the Believe Women movement, for me, that's listen to women, don't dismiss women, don't ignore women. And the lack of any statement felt dismissive and ignoring. So I'm very pleased that statement exists. The second portion of it is essentially saying, unless there are official criminal proceedings, we can't do anything ourselves. Now, that is the case because, as we've discussed, and as John Wertheim in his pieces has discussed at length, an ATP protocol doesn't exist for domestic violence like it does with other sports. Nothing's changed since we discussed that in depth on Monday, that it ought to exist. And I would just say that there certainly is precedent for the ATP investigating independently non-criminal activities. You know, they are conducting an investigation into Sam Querrey's absconsion, is that a word, from Russia, aren't they? They have investigated Nick Kyrgios's, albeit on-court behaviour, but also some of his off-court behaviour, some of the things he said in press and so on. So there is precedent for them to take action and to investigate non-criminal allegations and non-criminal suspected behaviour. So that doesn't quite sort of logically hang together for me, but I'm very pleased that statement exists.
Yeah. We also received, over the course of the last few days, a lot of response to the show that we put out on Monday, and we would have expected that, and all manner of different views came over. One which I did want to just briefly address here is a comment from a listener, Odin FK, who wrote to me and said, "I found it a bit weird that you didn't take into account that Zverev's legal counsel has very likely told him to not ever say anything more than, 'I didn't do it.' Doesn't make his denial less clumsy at all, but it belongs in the picture, I think." Now, obviously today he has said some more. He still hasn't specifically done what the ATP have said in very clear language here, that we expect all members of the tour to condemn any form of violence or abuse, but he has said certainly more than he did to this point. One of the things I wanted to know is whether legally he would be compromising himself in any way if he were to say much more. And so what I did is I went and dropped a note to a sports lawyer that I know, Jamie Singer from Onside Law, who's one of the leading sports lawyers in the UK, and just asked his view on where a player or a person in Zverev's type of position may stand, and whether what our listener there has put to us may have some validity. And Jamie said to me, "It's certainly possible that he's saying as little as possible because lawyers are looking at it, and a very conservative lawyer might take the view that he shouldn't say anything at all for fear that he later contradicts himself or changes his story, particularly if she presses charges. That said, there is no reason why he shouldn't also say more generally that he abhors domestic abuse. If she's not pressing charges, the legal strategy for the person accused can be secondary to the PR strategy. Pursuing a case against her for defamation could be part of that PR strategy. However, it's very risky. I would want to know everything about the case to be confident of advising him. There are significant risks in terms of the difficulties in persuading a court that he didn't do what is alleged. Generally, this comes down to which of the two of them appear more credible, the publicity that would continue to come from it, and the financial costs." So it doesn't wholly tell us. Obviously, Jamie can't know for sure exactly why Zverev is saying what he's saying, but certainly that is a consideration. And we really don't know exactly why he's taken the tack that he has. But it gives us a little bit more information anyway from the perspective of how a lawyer might approach these kind of things.
Mm. Yeah, maybe this is a very minor thing, but I think it's perfectly fine for, why couldn't he just have said, I need to to stick to a pre-prepared statement on this because of legal advice and just read what he had prepared? Why the pretense of sort of answering the question off the cuff and sort of shiftily looking down at his phone? That seemed like a PR misfire to me. Why not just say, look, I've thought very carefully and consulted people about what I can and can't say, and this is what I have to say at this stage, and read it out. Yeah. PR seems to be at odds with legality, perhaps, in terms of advice. I don't know. Who knows what's happening behind the scenes?
Certainly from what I've spoken to Jamie about, they should go hand in hand. And I certainly am. I'm certainly surprised by some of the things that Zverev has said over the last couple of weeks in response to this. That's where we are. We don't have any more to bring you at this point. As and when we do, we will cover them here on the Tennis Podcast.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So, the draws were made. We've had all the other players in as well to the to the press conferences today. I mean, I can't say I felt like they were exactly rip-roaring material from the it's a difficult environment, isn't it, really? A press conference generally is, especially a pre-tournament press conference, it's difficult to get an awful lot. And when you're doing it via Zoom and you get the sense that the player's examining what you've got in the back of your room while you're asking them a question, it's even more.
Hey, it's your choice if you have the video on.
True.
And a lot of people are making the wrong choice.
Why are you looking at me, Catherine?
No, you don't have the video on, and I approve of that choice.
All right.
I'd say, as a general rule, if you are driving, don't have your video on.
Somebody did.
Somebody did. Yeah.
Yes.
Or if your mannerisms are weird on Zoom, turn your video off.
Again, she's looking at me. I am on Zoom video right now.
Eliminated like an influencer.
Banged to rights. What about this draw then? We've got the two draws are called Tokyo 1970. And London 2020, and that marks the 50 years of this season-ending championships on the men's tour. Tokyo 1970, I imagine, being the first place ever to host the event. And obviously here we are in the final year of London 2020. Tokyo 1970 has got the following four players: Novak Djokovic, Daniil Medvedev, Alexander Zverev, and Diego Schwartzman. And they are going to play in the round-robin system starting on Monday. In London 2020, you've got Nadal, Dominic Thiem, Stefanos Tsitsipas, who's the defending champion, and Andrei Rublev, who's a debutante, isn't he, at this tournament. What are your thoughts, Matt?
Well, I think overarching thought is that they're quite even groups. I don't see a so-called group of death or anything like that. I think even just looking at them generationally, they're quite even. They've both got an established old guard in Djokovic and Nadal, then, I don't know, in tennis terms, a kind of middle-aged person in Thiem and Schwartzman, and then you've got a couple of younger players in each group as well. So I think they're quite even from that standpoint. Matchup-wise, the London group stands out to me more. There are probably just more players in that who I think match up more interestingly against each other in terms of the styles. I mean, straight away, we've got the first match of this year's competition is the last match of the 2019 edition, which is Thiem against Tsitsipas, and that was a fantastic final, and I like the way they play against each other. But what I would say is that the Tokyo group has a lot of informed players in it and good players on indoor hard courts. Zverev's shown that, Medvedev, Djokovic. So I think they're fairly balanced. I do feel a little bit for Diego Schwartzman. He made the rookie mistake, I think, and answered the question, what is your preferred group? And he has the complete opposite to what he said. He said he wanted Nadal, Thiem and Tsitsipas, and he's got Djokovic, Medvedev and Zverev.
Oh, Diego. And he didn't get his dinner, and they stitched him right up with the official tournament photo.
Yes.
How so?
Well, they do one of those ones where the players are in a V formation with the higher ranked players at the front and the lower ranked players at the back. And obviously Diego Schwartzman is the lowest ranked player here. So he's at the back of the formation. But the trick of perspective is supposed to make it look like they get bigger as they go back. And they do get bigger as they go back until it goes to Diego Schwartzman, who looks like take your son to work day for the other seven.
He's a foot shorter than Alexander Zverev as it is, and they've stuck him about 20 feet behind him. So it's not fair. But anyway, yeah, as you say, rankings dominate, it would appear. What do you think of the groups, Catherine?
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, instantly my eye was caught by the London 2020 group. That's the one where the matchups I find really, really mouthwatering. I did feel a bit for Diego Schwartzman, bless him. But then looking up the head-to-heads in the Tokyo 1970 group, they're kind of more appetizing than I thought. You know, Zverev and Djokovic have quite an interesting head-to-head against one another. Okay, maybe not so much Schwartzman and Djokovic, but, you know, Zverev Medvedev, rather, obviously, that's a rematch of Paris last week. It's broadly good, I think. It's one of the better draws. I mean, how exciting can a round robin two group draw be? You know, it's eight players, it's two groups. But I think, you know, on the scale of how excited I could get about a draw of eight players and two groups, this is at the higher end of it. It's a good one, I think.
I have to say, I felt the writing was on the wall a little bit for the press conferences when the first person in was Rafael Nadal, and the moment he sat down, he did the biggest yawn that I've seen in a while. And of course, he's arrived from Paris himself. He played the indoor tournament there, and I think he arrived pretty late at night the other day, and you know, it almost feels like players are getting sort of smuggled in to this arena under shield of darkness. But, you know, he seemed in pretty good spirits once he got past the yawn. And I suppose I'm still slightly trying to get my head around what has inspired him to play really at this time of year, given he's won the French Open, he's got an off season. There's a lot to worry about at the moment, you know, and he's spoken a lot about it, but he must really, really want this.
Well, he said in his Spanish portion of the press conference, he was asked that specific question, why are you playing when you've got to go to Australia quite early? And I think maybe that journalist was thinking along the same lines that we were thinking a few weeks ago, that he might take a break now. And Nadal said, I just need competition, because otherwise it would be too long a gap between Roland Garros and the Australian Open of nothing. And he was quite forthright about just needing matches, wanting reps. I think the ATP Finals is good in that respect from a round robin perspective. It guarantees him three matches against top 10 players. And it sounds like he's both thinking kind of short term and thinking maybe he has a chance of winning this tournament. He was quite bullish that he thinks he's probably playing better on indoor courts than he ever has in his career, noticing that it's still his weakest surface, but at the same time also thinking long term and actually thinking getting some competition in, like he did in Paris and here, might actually help him for the Australian Open and that swing at the start of next season. So I think he's thinking about it quite logically in that sense. He actually said that he thought he came into London last year with his best ever chance of winning the tournament, which kind of goes against how he played in that first match. I mean, he was really off his game, wasn't he, against Zverev? But he said it was more complicated by the fact that he knew he had the Davis Cup afterwards and just didn't quite know how to pace himself, perhaps. But now I think he's just got this focus on this week. And I do think Nadal's capable of playing well on indoor hard. There's been a lot of circumstances in the past which have conspired against him in terms of it coming at the end of the season when he's not fresh, but he is fresh now and he's got different ways to win. He's got more variety in his game possibly than ever, and I think he can use that. But it is interesting to see him transition from clay, which is his best surface, to indoor hard, which is probably his worst surface. We've never really seen that before. Well, we've never seen that. So you go from a player who's in total control of everything at Roland Garros to, I think the thing about indoor tennis is control's kind of taken away from Nadal a little bit, and you have to see him adapt to it a little bit more. So it's a really fascinating switch and transition that he's going through. And I just think Nadal's going to be so interesting to watch this week.
I've got a feeling he could be really dangerous, actually. I definitely think he'll... Oh, I've just stopped myself there. I was just going to very confidently say, I definitely think he'll come through that group. Then I stopped and thought about who's in the group. But yeah, I've got a really good feeling about him. If he can maintain circulation to his lower limbs, then I think he could play some good tennis. That is a reference to how tight his shorts are. If anybody's confused, they are very tight. Very tight.
And nobody's going with him, are they? You know, usually... When you start something like that, I mean, I'm old enough to remember the 80s when people used to have them, A, that short and twice, or rather that tight and twice as short. So it was like they were wearing their boxers. But usually the trends... Somebody starts a trend like that and everybody goes with them. You know, Nadal's a bit of a trendsetter, but nobody's going with those shorts, are they?
Did anyone go with the pirate shorts, apart from Matt Roberts, though?
John McEnroe. And Matt Roberts.
What a gang.
I mean, mind you, the sleeveless shirts took off for a while, didn't they? But, you know, they've died out. But you know, the moment that knee-length shorts came in, and Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi were really the first ones to do those.
Yeah, everyone was on board, weren't
they? People have been wearing those for 25 years since that.
Yeah. I mean, I do think circulation is important. I think that is problematic for this particular trend. The second of the official photos is, we think it's a photoshopped one because the players are all sat close together and they all look like they've been given slightly different briefs about what the photo is supposed to look like. Not sure what brief Tsitsipas has been given. but he's sort of astride. He's got his legs sort of hitched up and his racket in a really suggestive position. not sure what's going on. Anyway, Nadal is sitting down and sort of leaning forward pensively. And in the sitting down position, those shorts look really, really problematic.
Snug.
To me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there we are. So you've had your short analysis to go with everything else. So you said Nadal looks dangerous, Catherine, and you nearly.
That's not based on his. I mean, I've not seen him play tennis.
I know, but you nearly put him in your semi-finals. Yes. So who is in your semi-finals?
Oh, I haven't got. I've stopped myself. Go to Matt.
No. All right, Matt. Who's your top two in each group?
I really should have anticipated this question because...
Especially given I'm presenting.
I knew you were presenting, yes. honestly, I haven't thought about it. I think I'll go Nadal and Tsitsipas. I think Rublev's the kind of wild card in this tournament. Can he translate his numerous wins at ATP 250 and 500 level and just continue on this confidence wave against the best players in the world? That's where he's come unstuck this year, losing, who is it, Zverev, Tsitsipas and Medvedev at the Slams. So he hasn't quite been able to do that. So I think if he can do that, he's probably the player most in form and most confident. But I will go on his record this year and think he might not be able to quite raise it enough. Nobody asked Team how his foot was. I had my hand virtually up for most of the press conference, hoping to ask him how his foot was, and wasn't selected, unfortunately.
He should have tried to catch people's attention by popping your video on and doing something weird.
Because he was very much doing the very much looked bothered by that in that match in Vienna, didn't he?
Mm. Mm. Yeah, really. Definitely. Hampered. So if that is still any kind of problem, I would worry for him. Whereas Tsitsipas has had an injury as well. I think a leg problem since Roland Garros, but he was quite confident that it had pretty much gone away. He said, I'm close to 100%. I'm not really thinking about it.
Dominic Thiem was too busy to talk about his foot injury, talking about how, despite being middle-aged, according to Matt Roberts, he intends to play 3 Olympics.
Yeah,
in his career.
Really interesting. If I mean, we've got quite the history with Dominic Thiem, with Catherine's outrage at his lack of interest in playing the Olympics.
He's heard me, and he's trying to make up for it.
And it was really interesting because the way he sort of delivered it was as if, you know, I've come to this conclusion. Whereas I'm sitting there thinking, I have never heard him say that he wants to play the Olympics before. And he's saying that in 2016, he watched some of those matches when he didn't play and he really, really wanted to be part of it. And we're all thinking, well,
FOMO.
Hold on. You know, yeah. But then at the same time, you're thinking, well, hold on, you picked Kitzbühel over the blooming Olympics this year, if they'd have both been played. And I think that was a specific reason, though. I mean, he was the defending champion, wasn't he, for Kitzbühel? And I think
he's always going to be defending champion at Kitzbühel.
I think there was some sort of anniversary as well. But I mean, look, he was very clear that if the Olympics takes place in 2021, he intends to play it. And he said, I feel like I've got lucky, really, in my circle, in as much as now I can play it, you know, and he said if I get lucky in the future, basically if my body lasts long enough, I hope maybe I can play 3 Olympics. So we're talking about another 9 years. And what's he, 28?
Caught the Olympics bug.
Yeah, well, it is nice to hear. And you made the point that, and we talked in the Olympics Relived show to Nicolas Massu, his coach, and Catherine, you interviewed him and asked him directly. Do you intend to change Dominic Thiem's mind about the Olympics, given that you have had the greatest moments of your life on a court? And he wasn't really budging, was he? But it seems to have got through, Catherine. You did the trick.
Yes, it's all me. You're welcome, Dominic. If he ever wins a gold medal now, I want sort of an honorary little gold medal.
So, Catherine,
I'll get myself a medal somehow.
Matt's decided to ditch Thiem from his semi-finals. He's got Nadal and Tsitsipas coming through the London 2020 group. Who've you got?
Well, I can't not say Nadal now, because that would be discrediting myself in the space of 10 minutes. So I shall say Nadal. I'm going to discount, well, not discount, but Thiem is an unknown quantity for me because of the foot. Last time we saw him, he looked very hampered. So then it's the Tsitsipas Rublev toss up, and that's exactly as Matt described. Do you pick Rublev to kind of break his big player duck at this tournament? Do I pick him to do that? Probably not. I'm going to go Tsitsipas and Nadal as well. That's why I asked Matt to go first.
Yeah. I'm afraid I'm very boring as well, because I'm going for exactly the same. I'm going to go for Djokovic and Medvedev from the Tokyo group. What about you?
Yes.
Yep, same.
I like that pick.
Same.
Oh.
Sorry. Well,
where are the arguments coming from? This is rubbish. But, you know, we can only say what we think, folks. I mean...
Well, I'm not saying Diego Schwartzman has no chance. I give him a better chance than a lot of eighth-place qualifiers that we've had at this tournament in previous years. Last year, I can't remember exactly what I said, but I don't think I'd have been bigging up Matteo Berrettini's chances too much. You know, we've had... Who have we had? We've had sort of David Goffin come in.
Jack
Sock played really well, didn't he? I rate his chances higher than those folk. But I still think he's definitely, I doubt anybody's favourite to come through that group. I doubt many people are picking him to do so. And I think assuming most people are picking Djokovic, which why wouldn't you be, frankly? You're looking at a toss-up between Medvedev and Zverev, and that could be very close, but our most recent evidence to go on is a match very, very recently. So why wouldn't you go with the winner of that match, which was Medvedev?
I think Zverev actually dominates that head-to-head, but crucially, Medvedev has won... They're two really important matches, the final of Shanghai and the final of Paris. I just think when it really matters, he can raise his game a little bit more, and that matchup maybe suits him. Djokovic...
And I think Medvedev's... Sorry, Matt. I think Medvedev's got the bit between his teeth now. I think he's got a bit of a point to prove, both in terms of this year and in terms of this tournament, because he was so disappointing here last year. I think Medvedev could be a bit of a man on the mission.
Yeah, I think he almost sees this as a bit of a full circle moment, getting back to this tournament and almost a shot at redemption to do better than he did last year. And he was talking today about how this tournament kind of messed up his preparations for this season, because it confused him in terms of the off season. He'd never played this late into a season before, and he didn't get going this season quite as well as we perhaps thought he might, based on how well he'd played in 2019. And now he's back here and he's just got a chance to find his groove again and, yeah, just prove himself, I think, at this tournament. Djokovic is interesting because clearly the conditions suit him very favourably here. I mean, he absolutely dominated it. Well, he won four in a row. But he's actually not won it since 2015. And it's not like he's played poorly since then. I mean, he's won seven slams since he last won the O2. So something's happening at the end of this season where he's not quite delivering his best tennis at this tournament over the last few years. And I don't know the reason for that. I think potentially waning motivation. I do think there's a chance that this year. He's not quite had the post-lockdown results that he would have wanted. And I think perhaps winning this tournament, there is a bit more fire this week because he maybe feels like his season needs it. If you told him at the start of this year he would only win one slam and not the Masters, I think he would probably think that's kind of an average, if not slightly below average season, considering the standards he operates at. I think more than the last few years, this tournament is a little bit more important for Djokovic now, just as a one-off trophy in itself. So I'm expecting him to play well.
But by the same token, I do think the fact that he's already secured that year-end number one does risk him taking his foot off the pedal. He was asked about that. That was one of the first questions in his press conference. And he did say, yeah, that does take the pressure off me immensely. I mean, if the year-end number one was on the line, which, look, I know it was last year and he didn't win it, but if the year-end number one was on the line, I would be picking him hands down to win this title. I just think his desire and drive for that record is such that the defiance would just come out. I do think the fact that that's already in the bag takes a bit of an edge off him, potentially.
I think there's a possibility he may get deep into the trenches of a match and just not be able to quite have the stomach for it the way he would when everything relies on it, you know. But we'll find out. I mean, I agree with you, Matt, about the waning motivation, relatively speaking. Not that he doesn't want to win these things, but just how much have you got to give every single time? But then it is counterbalanced, perhaps, by a little bit more left in the tank with the curtailed year. So we'll find out. We've got an order of play for Sunday. Just to tell you about those singles matches, we've got Team against Tsitsipas is the first singles match on Sunday afternoon. Nadal against Rublev is the evening match. On Monday, Djokovic against Schwartzman is the afternoon one, and then Zverev against Daniil Medvedev in the evening. The doubles groups have been drawn, I've just seen, and we were keeping an eye on that today because of Jamie Murray and Neil Skupski trying to get there into that 8-team group of players that qualify for the year-end championships, and they were just edged out by the duo of Jürgen Meltzer and Edouard Roger Vassalan, who got to the final of Sofia, and by doing so, they managed to ensure that they qualified for London, and they promptly pulled out of the final. So Murray and Skupski are going to win that title.
It's a real two fingers up to Murray and Skupski, that, isn't it?
Not only are we going to London, you can stay here because
yeah,
we're off
going now.
Yeah, we're not even going to play you.
Feel for them.
The draw has been made, and quite a nice touch, actually. The two draws have been named one each after the Bryan brothers. So group Bob Bryan is going to feature the top seeds, Mate Pavic and Bruno Suarez. Then it's Marcel Granollers and Horacio Zabaios. The sixth seeds, John Peers and Michael Venus, and Jürgen Meltzer and Edouard Roger Vassalan. Then the other group, the Mike Bryan group, is Rajiv Ram and Joe Salisbury. So a bit of British interest there for us. Kevin Kravets and Andreas Mies. Wesley Kulhoff and Nikola Mektic, and then the eighth seeds, Lukasz Kubot and Marcelo Melo. So those are your groups.
I really like that touch about naming the groups after a Bryan brother. Mm.
Yeah. We've never had quite that setup, have we? And it is nice. They deserve that. And of course, they were hoping to play the full year this year, and they were unable to do so and retire with a sort of lap of honour the way that they would have been able to. But the pandemic obviously intervened in a way that it's done so many times. Just a note on Denis Shapovalov, folks, because Catherine's eyes are wide. She wants to know what I'm going to say here. But what I'm going to say...
Have you got into a Twitter spat again?
No. I've stayed out of his face this time, Catherine. But what he has done is... He has broken a racket as spectacularly as you could possibly break one. He lost in straight sets to Radu Albot in the first round in Sofia. And, I mean, it's been quite clear for a while that Denis Shapovalov is pretty much at the end of his tether. And he threw one halfway through the match. And then upon losing the match, he just launched his racket into the ground, and it bounced up into the air and then dropped. And it was so spectacular that the BBC Sport website, that was taking absolutely no notice of the Sofia tournament whatsoever, carved up this little racket smash combo into a montage in which they replayed it three times, getting increasingly close up in the focusing on the racket with each one, to the point at the end. When you saw Shapovalov actually try to pick up the racket, he had to almost tug it out of the ground because he dented the court a little bit, and the racket had slightly just stuck in the court.
Oh, my goodness.
He'd done it so violently. And that sort of brought to an end his autumn season, really,
well,
didn't
his
it?
His season.
Well, yeah. I believe he's gone to London as an alternate.
Has he?
Yeah. Him and Berrettini have rocked up.
They're going to have a weird time. Wow.
I think Monfils didn't want to go. I think he might be a bit injured anyway.
I mean, fair enough.
Yeah, and Berrettini and Shapovalov, I believe, are the two alternates.
He is not in a headspace to be an alternate in a bubble. But I've enjoyed today because it's one day. You know, I'm very much looking forward to the tennis starting and working, and I mean, good God. someone send them a mental health professional.
Oh, dear.
A concern. I sort of naively assume they might not be bothering with alternates this year. But hey, there's two of them, apparently. Oh, poor Berrettini. He was a non-alternate last year, and remember how chuffed he was? And now he's here just
watching Lorraine.
Practice partner.
Watching Lorraine.
having three courses from the room service.
With the same bloke delivering it every time. He's really perfected his I'm not judging you face.
He's working long hours.
Oh, dear. Right, so there we are. It all gets underway on Sunday at midday with the first of the doubles, and Catherine will be there.
Yes, I think we're on air just before the doubles, but the studio is covering the doubles, all the doubles and all the singles, so we'll be there.
Yeah, we're going to be watching. We're going to be watching every moment Catherine's on air, and then we're like, right, at the end of it, right, Catherine, come on, let's go and do a podcast now. And she'll be like, well, some of us have been doing 12 hours work. What have you been doing?
Fair point.
Yeah.
And you'll say, I blooming well got you in at the Putney Dental Emporium at 10 a.m.
Correct.
On Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. I'm good for something. So there we are. I can't wait for it all. Matt, have we got any shout-outs?
Yes, we do today. Shout out to Ryan Riley.
Thank
Hello,
you,
Ryan,
for your
great
backing.
Name.
To Shilpa Ram.
Ooh, relative of Rajiv.
Unconfirmed.
Okay. Hello, Shilpa.
Hi,
Let
Shilpa.
Us know.
Thanks for your support.
And to Victoria Kearns.
Victoria
or Victoria?
Well, I've written Vic/Victoria because this was one who came up anonymously on Kickstarter, but helpfully got in touch with us so that I could search for their name. And she signed her emails Vic, but she's Victoria in other places, so I wasn't sure what to go with. So I've gone with a slightly confused and awkward Victoria.
Great. Hello, Victoria.
Yeah.
So you've got two shout-outs.
Hey.
Well done, you.
Well, indeed. And thank you very much for all of your support. And the reason we're giving those shout-outs is because all three of those listeners contributed to our Kickstarter last year to help us run this thing. We're up to 132 editions of the Tennis Podcast for the year. And Catherine's got that sort of, yeah, and it feels like it, look about her at the moment.
No, you've misinterpreted my facial expression.
Have I? I've been doing that for the last 13 years. And yeah, so basically we're going to carry on. We're going to do another daily one every day of this tournament at the ATP Finals. And we got our Kickstarter passed today. I'd entered it a few days ago and they didn't like the look of me. And they said, well, we're going to have to put that under review. Now they've given me the green light. So, yeah, we can hopefully run for another year, Catherine, if people pitch in.
David didn't take that rejection very well at the time. It was a big relief today, that green light.
It certainly was. So, yeah, we've thought up all sorts of new categories and things like that for you to get involved with if you'd like to. And thanks to everybody that supported us at the start of this year. If you want a reminder for when we go live with the new one, we're going to be going live on December the 1st, which I think is a Tuesday. If you go down and ask in your show notes just now, you can sign up for an email reminder on that day when we go live with it. And you'll be at the front of the queue then for any of the rewards that you might want to get involved with. So thanks to everybody and to all those who have introed the show, to the shout outs. And we will be back on Sunday with a new show. Can't wait, Catherine. And
Me neither.
We get to watch you on the telly first. So tune into Prime Video Sport if you're in the UK and you want to see Catherine present television brilliantly from the O2
with
arena.
A full set of teeth.
Yes, thanks to me. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.